Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 256. My name is John and joining me as always is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Hello, good evening.
Yeah, good evening, Ryan. It's been a long, long time since we've recorded an episode of the show here. We have been staying away from recording due to, the ongoing strike in Hollywood and not wanting to... wanting to support that strike, and so we've been avoiding recording. However, we have a very special guest with us tonight, Chris Baker, author of Scorpion Vader, a new Star Wars book all about Star Wars video games. So welcome, Chris.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a pleasure to talk Star Wars in general at all times. I just put out this book. The full name is actually... X-Wings, Lightsabers, and Scorpion Vader. I just use Scorpion Vader as kind of the shorthand. X-Wings, Lightsabers, and Scorpion Vader, celebrating 40 years of Star Wars video games. I don't know where I should even start. Should I just start talking about who I am and what brought us here and that sort of thing?
Yeah, actually, yeah, it'd be great if you could, tell us and our audience a little bit about yourself.
I've been... part of the video game industry in one way or another since technically, I guess, 1998, when I saw an ad for a website called the All Game Guide, where basically I was looking for a summer job in college. And this place just kind of showed up out of nowhere. It's like, we want to pay you guys to write about video games. We're making this database of every single video game ever made, and we want descriptions of every game, reviews of every game. It's like, okay, I played a lot of video games. I can do this. I can write. It's a good way to spend my summer while I think about my senior year or whatever. But yeah, I started working there and I wrote for them for about 2 years, year and a half, something like that. And eventually that got me the experience to go into the actual real like day job side of things. I was on the official US PlayStation magazine as an editor from 2000 to 2004. And during that time I got to review a ton of games and do cool stuff, like meet Mark Hamill.
Wow.
I got to, he was actually the voice of Wolverine in a Wolverine video game, the X2, the game that came out with X2 that had nothing to do with X2 other than having Hugh Jackman on the cover. He was the voice of Wolverine in that. So I actually got to hang out with him in the sound booth. It was just me and Mark Hamill talking for 20 minutes. It was a life highlight for sure. I got to review games like the original Battlefront and Bounty Hunter and the Clone Wars, and contribute to other Star Wars related things throughout. And eventually I made a shift, to the publisher side of things. And I went to work for a little company called LucasArts, where I was a PR guy for about, 3 years. And that was during the first game that came out. Actually, technically the first game that came out was Republic Commando. I had nothing to do with that. First game I did anything on was the Episode 3 game, where I just, kind of helped promote that in its later stages. Battlefront 2, the first Battlefront 2 was the one that I kind of saw from the entire campaign, I was so new, it wasn't my responsibility, but I certainly assisted with that. Lego Star Wars 2, however, was more all me, not all me, but largely me. I got a cover for The Force Unleashed back when we thought it was going to come out in 2007, but it's like another year and a half, I think, after that. I was there for almost 3 years, and then someone I worked with there actually was like, hey, I know you're in PR, I know you want to get a little closer to actually making video games, I'm over at Marvel now, you want to come over here? So it was really hard. It was really hard to leave LucasArts because I do love that. And this was pre-MCU by a few months. Like, one of the first things I did when I got to Marvel was I got a early screening of Iron Man, like the original Iron Man. Like it came out in May. I think I saw it in January, and it had like almost no special effects. And it was really interesting to watch. But yeah, you could tell it was something special was going to happen. So yeah, I worked at Marvel. My main job there was to approve like all the Marvel content that went into video games. So, you know, a lot of Spider-Man games that Activision did, Ultimate Alliance 2, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Lego Star Wars, or no, Lego Marvel, sorry. Not Lego Star Wars, Marvel. But yeah, you know, and I've worked at other places since. I worked at a place called Gazillion for a little bit. I worked at Zen Studios, which you may know for Star Wars Pinball. Some of your Star Wars guys may know them for that. I actually worked on RPGs there. I wrote a few RPGs. And, you know, I've had little kind of odd jobs in the midst. And one of them was writing. This was in 2017. I was kind of between jobs at the time. And my old editor at the PlayStation magazine was running a website called Glixel. .com, which no longer exists, but it was basically Rolling Stone's video game section around then. And it was a lot of kind of like really long feature articles and, you know, not like reviews, but like, you know, I don't want to say listicle, but like a more heady version of listicles a lot of time, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, they kept paying me to write about Star Wars video games there. And I wrote some really in-depth things about Star Wars video games there, which sort of leads into what I just put out here. This, we'll just call it Scorpion Vader for shorthand. It's the book itself. I decided to put it together about early last year, because early last year I realized it's 2022. The first Star Wars game came out in the summer of 1982. This year is its 40th anniversary, and I don't think anyone's going to actually recognize that. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I was right. No one really recognized that. but unfortunately, I just, you know, I originally was like, I'm going to do something brand new. I'm going to, like, just do like a compendium of every Star Wars game with like descriptions and everything. You know, I had a day job. This just wasn't practical. So then I realized, you know, I've got like 15,000 words of stuff that I've written that I own that I can just put out. So why don't I just put that together and, you know, call it a celebration of Star Wars games. So, you know, I started to do that. And then I realized, you know, I have this thing that's like 40 great moments in Star Wars video games through 2017. We've had, you know, Fallen Order since then. We've had, you know, Battlefront 2, you know, Squadrons, Vader Immortal, you know, several cool games have come out since then. It's probably going to change the rankings a little bit. You know, my own feelings have changed over the years, so that's going to change a bit. You know, and on my own YouTube channel, I had done some stuff that I was, you know, I thought would make things easier. I have a YouTube channel. It's mainly about superhero video games. It's superhero.vg. You can get there. But I did, like, I was going to do for the 40th anniversary of Empire in 2020, I was going to do like a list of every Battle of Hoth in video games, because that they started in Battle of Hoth. It's almost a cliche. I did part one, which was through 1999, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to finish this. You know, it's just descriptions of a few games, right? And, you know, that was way more work than I thought it was going to be. So, you know, things happened, and eventually the book came out, what, in August of this year. So, or no, the very first of September, earlier this year. So it was more like, it's more like celebrating 41 years of Star Wars video games, but 40 is a little more marketable. and I, as I point out in the introduction, you know, the first Star Wars game I played was The Empire Strikes Back for Intellivision, which came out in 1983. So from a certain point of view.
Yeah.
It's 40 years.
Right on.
Celebrating Star Wars gaming. My 40 years of Star Wars gaming. So that's basically how this all happened. And, you know, I had some experience self-publishing on Kindle. I should mention, at least for now, it's a Kindle exclusive book. You know, it doesn't mean you have to have a Kindle. A lot of people don't realize, you know, you can, if you have an iPhone or, you know, an Android phone or iPad, et cetera, just get the Kindle app and you can look at it there. But yeah, you know, I'm contemplating a physical release, but that actually is a lot more work than you think it is with formatting, yes, especially with many screenshots and stuff as I have. And it would be significantly more expensive than the $4.99 that the Kindle book is. Yeah, so I don't know. Have you guys had a chance to check it out at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been reading it the last week or two. Just finished it up today, and
cool.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. So, and I know Ryan, awesome, you've been reading it too, right?
Yeah. So I also want to celebrate another milestone on this podcast, and that is 21 years of reading Chris Baker writing.
Oh, really?
Because I finished the book tonight, and then viewers or listeners can't see this if you're listening to the podcast, but I have a stack of my old official
PlayStation
magazines. This is not even all of them. These were the ones I found in one box in my basement. Tonight before recording.
What a pleasant surprise. I think I'm gonna cry. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I love seeing that.
Yeah, but I was a subscriber back in the day, so I'm I'm very familiar with
your
work.
Just made my mind. That's awesome. Thank you so much for showing me that.
Yeah,
that was a very special time. That was an you couldn't ask for a better first job.
Oh,
in life, you know?
Yeah. This isn't an episode to talk about that magazine, but there's like flipping through these old issues, like it's amazing. Like, you know, the people from the magazine who went on to do like 1UP and stuff, which is a very special website for sure. And then people like John Scalzi writing music reviews in there, like reviewing like NoFX records and stuff in here.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a cool magazine. It was a little more highbrow, you know, than others of the time. There were like DVD reviews were a thing. Like, it was really fun, like flipping through
that. Yeah, that was because, you know, the PlayStation 2 was a revelatory device in many ways because it was a lot of people's first DVD player.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was revelatory the right word there, but it's a big word. I'll stick with it. it revealed what DVDs actually could do to many people, including myself. That was my first DVD player.
Oh yeah. Me too.
It wasn't
the
greatest DVD player, but it certainly functioned fine for the most part. But,
I was reading the
CDs too. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was reading the book today actually, and I was looking at the section about Super Star Wars. And I think on the first page of the section about Super Star Wars, there's two magazine covers there, and that was like I was thinking about how sort of powerful and important those magazines were, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, like. And that was like one of my, I don't know, it's a weird thing to say, but like one of my favorite moments reading the book was just seeing those magazine covers there. And it like took me back to what it felt like to be anticipating and excited about those games coming out. So
the magazines you're talking about are Electronic Gaming Monthly, November 1992 had the cover of Super Star Wars, and Nintendo Power around that time also had Super Star Wars as its cover. And you know, it's part of the article about the 40 greatest moments. When I say 40 greatest moments, I don't necessarily mean like sometimes it is a moment in a video game. In fact, number one is probably the moment you think it is.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. I mean, how can it not be, really? But that one you're talking about was a moment to me, which was like the dark times are over. Like, as soon as I saw, you know, I had been reading the Zahn books, I think the first two were out at that point. But like, as soon as I saw like Star Wars on the cover of a magazine again, it was like, all right, we're back in. Good things are going to happen. So, there was a time when magazines were really all we had for video game mm-hmm. news. If you were lucky, maybe your newspaper carried, you know, a review that usually wasn't very good every, you know,
yeah,
like a weekly column or something. But yeah, it's kind of hard to fathom if you weren't around then just how like special it was to get a new Nintendo Power in your mailbox. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, I look forward to it every day. It's like you go weeks without any video game news, without any screenshots, with, you know, you can't even imagine that today. It's everywhere. But back then, like, magazines were it.
Yeah, it's funny too, because I still deeply love video game magazines. Obviously, I hold on to them for way longer. They are just an absolute fire hazard in my basement right now, and I'm fine with that. But I still subscribe to some magazines, awesome. Mostly out of Europe. Like, I still get Retro Gamer,
Retro's great
magazine, and Play Magazine, which is the it's the European PlayStation magazine, which I think might be the only, I guess there's like Nintendo Force here, but like platform specific magazines, like, they just don't really exist anymore.
I think we still have PC Gamer, but it's it's so thin.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like a pamphlet. It's,
yeah, there's definitely no demo discs. yeah. But I, no you're need. Right. Yeah, there's I do no see need. Those like at like Micro Center. But yeah, and so I get Play Magazine, which is still like a really exciting thing for me.
Sure.
To like just get that in the mail. I always get it like a month later because it's being shipped from Europe and everything. But they had a Jedi Survivor cover
nice.
Recently, which was really cool, just to get a magazine with a, you know, Star Wars video game cover. And that actually brings me to something I really like about your book. Like, as of right now, like, it is coming in hot. Like, there, it is like very like, it's focused on a lot of like retro stuff, but it's also acknowledging a lot of contemporary things, like Ahsoka is mentioned in there and Jedi Survivor. And that just makes for, I don't know. It was just really nice to, kind of see that, you know, kind of juxtapose like the old and the new.
Sure.
And so I guess that's kind of my first like actual question, for you. Do you still, stay like on top of like modern Star Wars video games?
Oh, yeah, of course. More so than anything. Like, Star Wars and superheroes are my thing. So, you know, I really want to play Baldur's Gate 3, but I just haven't had any time, and I have a 3-year-old that keeps me up way later than a 3-year-old should. And so, you know, Jedi Survivor and Spider-Man 2 are going to be the games that I play this year, right? But yeah, if a Star Wars game comes out, I have to play it. You know, I will admit I haven't actually played like anywhere near every Star Wars game. I'm well educated on them all, but there are certain things I probably wouldn't even want to admit as the quote unquote Star Wars gaming expert in terms of certain games I haven't even played or you know, played minimally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I certainly keep tabs on things. You know, to me, any licensed game, I've just always been kind of fascinated with them, even when they're bad. Which, you know, let's mm-hmm. face it, a lot of them are.
Yeah.
I think Star Wars has a better track record than a lot of other ones, but mm-hmm. There's still some not so great stuff in there. But yeah, I'm always just interested like in how a developer takes source material and adapts it. And, you know, like, do they really care? Are they Are they into, do they want to expand on the lore? Do they just want to take something that's there and give it their own spin for the sake of gameplay? It's just really interesting to me. Even if it's not necessarily fun, it's always interesting.
Yeah, Ryan, you were just posting about Batman on NES a couple days ago, and to me, that's the first game I think of. Okay. Behind Chris there. But that's the first thing I think of.
Iconic cover.
Yeah, one of the first games I think of when I think of like a game that's a just a really successful, kind of reinterpretation of a property. I mean, in that case, Batman 89, the movie, but it just like there's something so cool about taking that movie and somehow recreating like the tone and the vibe and the feel of it in an 8-bit game on the NES. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's amazing when a licensed game is able to do that. As you said,
Purple Batman, we all love
Michael Keaton. Also so not canon.
Yeah.
No, I actually have a video on my YouTube channel about just how, fun that game is, but also like incredibly off brand. It's like,
yeah,
just one brand violation. And after the brand violation was a term I definitely picked up during my Marvel days. there's almost nothing is actually on brand for Batman in that Batman game.
And yet I think it captures the tone and the feel of that 89 movie really well.
That's
though,
true,
you
too.
Know?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So
yeah, it certainly had the vibe and I guess the cutscenes to a certain extent, which back then was pretty cool just to see like digitized Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicholson and like Kim Basinger for one screen.
Yeah.
The Game Boy version is like even more egregious because you're just Batman with a gun. Mowing dudes down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, that and what was that? A Return of the Joker on NES also is just like Contra basically.
Yeah. Amazing
this
looking
is not
game.
Batman
though.
At all, but yeah. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
It's one of the prettiest games on the system.
Totally.
Yeah, so I mean, like, with you mentioned that you haven't played every single Star Wars game. I was curious, like, what the process was like, maybe when you were doing the original, pieces for Glixel, but what the process was like of trying to look at, 40 plus, I don't know how many, Star Wars games total, but so many, Star Wars games. Yeah. I mean, there were moments when I was reading the book where I was amazed, like when you were referencing some of these, lost forever cell phone games from the mid 2000s and things like that.
There's almost nothing on some of it. Like literally there's one game that there is nothing.
Yeah.
There's no YouTube presence. It's like, it's completely lost to time. Not even as far as I can tell, the most Android games anyway, you can find their file somewhere in the depths of the internet. This, what is it? It's a Battlefront game. It's Battlefront Mobile or something like that. There's I think two or three mobile Battlefront games.
Yeah.
That, no one played, no one remembers.
Yeah. But,
they exist. So I acknowledge them.
Well, and I bet they can't be fun. I doubt they could have been very much fun, but I was like looking at those screenshots in the book and I was thinking like, I want to play this or I want to see this, cause it looks cool. But yeah, I'm sure they couldn't have been fun.
I played The Empire Strikes Back, which was a THQ mobile game from 2007 or something. You can get an emulator or if you have an Android device, you can sideload the, I think it's an APK file, I want to say. Mm. But yeah, I played it on an emulator, and it's actually, cell phone games are better on a computer because of just the tactile nature of a keyboard is better than a flip phone.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think so. Yeah.
So that's how I played that. And, it was incredibly simple, but it looked okay for what it was, I guess. And I didn't hate it.
Yeah. Was that the top-down shooter one?
Empire Strikes Back. I think I just put the Hoth level in book, but it does have more scenes from it. So that was like, I wouldn't call it a shooter. It's more like an avoider.
Okay.
Because you don't actually shoot.
Okay.
Because that would add too much complexity to the cell phone game. So you're in your snowspeeder and you're just trying not to get shot.
You're just moving and back and forth.
Not run into AT-ATs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's such a bummer. Like, I didn't, like, reading the book, I think, you know, I was familiar with, like, all the big PC and console Star Wars games, but it was the mobile ones where it was just, like, page after page of, like, wow, I had no idea this, right. like, even existed. And some of them were, like, I mean, like, that one, I was thinking, like, man, I have always wanted a Star Wars shmup. Like, an 8-bit, 16-bit, you know, just top-down shooter. Like, why did we never get one of those? And then there was, like...
I got one for you. I'll name one. Yeah, I think it's just one. Or it's two. There's two.
Okay.
And they are... There's another thing I considered putting in this book... that I didn't. One, because I just wanted to get the thing out, and it had enough content. Two, because I wanted to be mostly positive, and this is decidedly negative, because it is a video on my YouTube channel called You've Never Heard of the Worst Star Wars Games Ever. And I'm guessing you... let me know if you have.
Okay. I don't
in
think
1987,
so.
In Spain, and only Spain, for... a console called the MSX, which came out in Europe and Japan.
Konami, yeah.
There were, from a company
Microsoft.
Called Walther Miller. It's like Walter with an H in it. Mm-hmm. Walther. Walther Miller. A very Spanish name.
Yeah. Okay.
But a company called Walther Miller put out two Droids games and two Ewoks games.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
They're basically carbon copies of each other. There's like a Droids game and an Ewoks game that are both kind of a memory kind of a thing. Like like the game Memory, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that. That's the game. And you have to, your reward is revealing like an MS Paint style picture of the Droids or Wicket. The Wicket one is especially awful because... half of the picture, and I'm not kidding here, half of the picture, the top half of the picture, is sky. And they don't show the wind, and it's just from his torso up, so it's not even like his full body. But the other two are shooters. They actually are shooters.
Okay.
Really bad basic shooters. One, the Droids one, is called The White Witch. Do you guys remember Droids at all? Do you remember
the cartoon?
What the White Witch was? The White Witch was... I had to do the research. I don't remember it either, so don't feel bad. But the White Witch was the... their speeder, like comparable to Luke's speeder in the original movie. And it didn't... In the show, it had no weapons. It had no guns. But in here, it's like, you know, it's... like the Vic Viper from Gradius or something. It's like just blasting things away. And then the other one, a little more on brand, I guess, is your Wicket with arrows, like shooting.
Okay.
The Dandelion Warriors, which was one episode of the TV show.
Okay.
So. Huh. Yeah, those games are not actually mentioned in the book. Not every game is named in the book. Part of me wanted to do like just a list, but I just had enough content. If I want to do a list, I could really do just a list and make that its own book and have screenshots and stuff like that. And that might be something I do eventually. But yeah, those are the... There's some... controversy, or I don't know, we can't completely confirm they're licensed games, but I think they are, because they were in a magazine, you know, they had like an ad in a magazine with the copyright Lucasfilm Limited 1987, you know. I think they were licensed, and apparently Droids and Ewoks were huge in Spain for some reason.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I know you said they're not good, but I kind of want to check those out. I don't know if they're...
I would just recommend looking at my video, honestly. where I got almost all of my information from a translated Spanish website.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
There are YouTube clips that I kind of put together, but there's not many YouTube clips.
Yeah.
And those games are the most expensive also. They're like $1,000 a piece.
Oh, wow.
You can even find them. Yeah. So I have a near complete collection of Star Wars games. It ain't going to have those.
Yeah.
Right.
What was that process like of putting together a nearly complete collection of Star Wars games? I mean,
very
it's ongoing, I guess.
A normal person, because I worked at LucasArts, and one day my boss said, you know, this is our marketing closet full of extra copies of games. If there's anything that, you know, there's just multiple copies of that we're not promoting anymore, just, you know, feel free to take one for yourself. So I did. And that's probably half. Maybe not even half, maybe like a third. That guy, it is a great head start, though. It's the kind of, I would not have started this quest to get every Star Wars game if I didn't have that head start, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, like, I think I decided I wanted to go for it like in 15 or 16.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I started hitting retro gaming conventions and just eBay. Retro gaming conventions are more fun than eBay, but, you know, sometimes eBay is just easier.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I saw something at a decent price, I would just get it. And, you know, it wasn't like I got them all at once or anything. It was a gradual thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a few that I'm missing other than that one. And a couple just got lost along the way. So I have to copy of Flight of the Falcon, which isn't worth it, really, but I have to say that I own Flight of the Falcon. You ever played
that? It's a Game Boy
Advance. Game Boy Advance.
Game Boy Advance, yeah.
Yeah.
Not good.
No. I have a loose
excellent
card
concept. Terrible execution. It's like
probably not the right platform for that game.
it was ambitious, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, that turns into like 12 frames a second.
Yeah.
3D models on a GBA. Not the best idea, but, I guess I can give him credit for ambition. I don't know. What else did you guys find interesting in the book?
Well, there's a few things I have in my notes. Some things that made me very happy to see was a little bit of love for the Star Wars Kinect game.
Sure.
Which is,
it's a great story.
It's a very, like, human, personal story in there that, you know, I think helps.
I haven't plainly stated this. There's a lot of quotes from developers throughout the book. More than 15 different developers, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30 unique quotes about, you know, working on these games. And my friend Craig Derrick has a very touching thing that it actually it got a lot of heat, a lot of hate for stuff like, you know, DDR Star Wars,
Han Solo,
yeah.
But classic, you know, kids loved it. They really did. And, you know, the story he tells about a kid telling him how much he loved it, and the place where he tells him that is actually.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a game that does, you know, get a lot of, you know, gets dunked on a lot. There was like an infamous like E3 presentation, with it and stuff. But, you know, it's also a game that, like, you know, my wife and I like had a blast playing like in our living room. And so, you know, it was nice to see, that game not just get like, you know, written off, but like also have this like really touching story in there.
Yeah, I tried to put a positive spin on anything negative. You know, like one of the most memorable moments that's in the, I think it's number 5. Let's just say it involves Battlefront 2. And if you know your history, you know something pretty infamous about the new Battlefront 2, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
the newer Battlefront 2. But, you know, I put a very positive spin on that particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to keep things positive because we're celebrating.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, that's generally the approach that we take here. You know, there's stuff that's obviously not great that happens around Star Wars, and, you know, there can, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is still, like, this fun thing that we so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, even something like Masters of Teras Kasi, which, you know, I didn't hate when it came out. I rented it a weekend, and I was like, okay, this is dumb, but I kind of enjoyed myself. But, you know, it's kind of infamous, and, you know, the developer quote I have in there is like, yeah, you know, no one's really proud of this, but this was a pretty funny thing that happened when we made it. So yeah, there's some fun stuff in there. I guess, you know, one thing, did you guys know about Scorpion Vader? The main on the cover?
I was just going to say, actually, I really appreciate that you gave quite a bit of love to Namco Star Wars. Because yeah, we've talked about that game on this show before. I think we have video of that game on our YouTube channel, Ryan, if I remember correctly from way back when. I love that game. I think it's really, really fun. I love that era. And, you know, JVC Star Wars game on NES is okay, but, you know, it's when I played Namco Star Wars that I was like, oh, now here's like the 8-bit Star Wars game for me. You know, I loved it. So,
where did you discover that? Because I didn't know about it till I remember my friend showed it to me on his PSP that he had hacked to play NES games.
I have a story for that.
Yeah, tell me.
So I in 2007, I moved to Japan to teach, and I just had my tiny little apartment, and I didn't know anyone except I knew one person there, and you know, I would just spend a lot of time just like walking around, and I like started to find like some of like the used game stores and stuff, and I got a Famiclone, and was like, wow, like Famicom games are 50 yen, like just everywhere, like all of these games, they are like free, basically. Yeah. So I just started like buying Famicom games, and I was like, oh, here's that. And like a Japanese version of the NES Star Wars game. And, you know, I had played as a kid and stuff. And then like, I got it back to my apartment. I was like, whoa, this is not that JVC game. Right. And somehow like, and I've always been like pretty like in tune to like, especially like, you know, Japanese games. Like I had been, you know, reading like Game Fan magazine, and like I was on forums and stuff all the time, but somehow like that game I didn't know it existed.
You know, and even back then, you know, the article I wrote, basically the article in the book is about the game. It's kind of a defense of the game from the perspective of, hey, there's something weird about all Star Wars games, really. and, you know, I did a lot of research. I actually reached out and somehow managed to get a hold of a person who worked on the game, the composer on it, who is the very first person to do a BitTune version of the Star Wars theme. And I actually talked to someone at the Strong Museum of Play, where they have a complete collection of Famitsu, which is the big video game magazine in Japan, very much inspired Electronic Game Monthly. They pretty much ripped it off. You know, the game supposedly came out December of 1987. And, you know, at the Strong Museum, they were like, yeah, I want to help you find it in our archive. I want to look through all these magazines and find an article about it for you. They couldn't find anything. Nothing. No ads, no reviews. It was like it didn't even exist. For Star Wars.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so bizarre. It was like that no one localized it. Because, like, honestly, like, as far as, like, licensed NES games go, like, it's not bad. It's really hard, but so are, like, so many.
Borderline and, impossible one-hit kills, but yeah.
It's, yeah, but, like, I mean, it's not, like, necessarily worse than, like, Back to the Future or something
It's not an LGN game. LJN.
Well, yeah. Sure. But, like, yeah. I'm so surprised that, you know, it didn't get localized. But also, like, I think, you know, Namco at that time had, like, a pretty challenging relationship with Nintendo for a while there. And, like, you know, the Tengen games and all of that happening. So, yeah, it's just one that, like, slipped through the cracks. And, you know, even, like, it wasn't really, like, one of those, like, infamous, like, games that, you know, got kind of popular because of, you know, emulation or anything, stuff like Zero Wing or, you know, whatever. But somehow it, like, just completely, like, escaped me until I actually found a physical cartridge and, like, put it in, you know, a machine in Japan. And then I was like, wow, this exists. Like, this is so magical.
Yeah, I think a lot of people know about it through the Angry Video Game Nerd. He had a Star Wars episode and went all out on the Scorpion Vader, which, you know, it should be mentioned that Vader also turns into other things, such as a Wampa, I think a shark or some kind of sort of sea creature, and the Gauss Vader, which is like a Godzilla, the Godzilla type character. Gauss, which is a copyrighted thing that they just decided to use and call it that.
A different era.
Yeah. And, you know, and it, like, as you guys are talking about, like, the fact that it didn't get localized and brought over to the US, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, well, you know, maybe that interpretation of Star Wars, I don't know if, like, LucasArts or, you know, whoever, Namco in America or whoever it may be, may have thought, well, it's too much for, you know, U.S. audiences, or it's a little too, you know, far away from, like, canon Star Wars or, you know, what people expect from Star Wars. But then Star Wars is, like, kind of the same thing, right? There's all kinds of crazy creatures and things in Super Star Wars that are, you know, nothing to do with the movie.
I bet a lot of LucasArts didn't even know it existed for a long time, or if at all, because, you know, think about it, like, it probably came about through some Lucasfilm licensing deal with Japan and Japan only, and, you know, there's nothing that LucasArts would even do at that time in 1987 when they're all, you know, making, not even at Monkey Island yet, you know, like, a Maniac Mansion era, I guess. You know, they're not there for brand assurance or anything like that. So, you know, it was probably just, I imagine the MSX Spain games were the same way. Like, someone reached out to Lucasfilm and there wasn't much going on. So they're like, okay, yeah, sure. Give us some money and do whatever you want. And, you know, like, I actually had access to, back then I had access to, like, the library of various licensed media, which was mostly complete. It didn't have this game. I had to order this game off of eBay for a, one thing I did was I made a Star Wars Celebration 2007. I curated, like, an exhibit of every Star Wars game ever. And so that's when I had to order. I imagine most of LucasArts learned about that game because I knew about it through my friend and his PSP. You know, I don't think they knew. I think there's still a chance that someone like a Limited Run Games or an IM8-Bit could come along and, you know, somehow find the source code may be lost to time too. That's a thing.
Yeah.
I think they would sell out, you know, of their limited runs, whether it is Limited Run itself or a company like that. Or even, like, if, you know, someone like a Digital Eclipse could do some sort of collection and, you know, for the first time ever, we have an official U.S. release of this weird game.
I would love that. Rewind features
off the table. Yeah. And if anyone's listening who would be part of that, you know, I'll help.
Yeah, well, because Digital Eclipse has done the Atari 50 game and now the Making of Karateka game that they just released. And so, you know, that's they're doing great work with sort of documenting the history of games and releasing, you know, obviously playable games is like kind of all together. So that would be an amazing thing.
And Limited Run literally has released.
Oh yeah,
NES Star Wars games.
Sure. Yeah.
They re-released Star Wars games, and I think they did a Sega CD re-release of Rebel Assault.
Yeah. I think I have everything Star Wars. Well, not everything Star Wars that they released. I have something representative of. If it came in a cool box.
Yeah,
that's what it was. That was my rule.
Your exhibit of the history of Star Wars games, that was that Celebration 4?
Yes, Celebration 4, LA
John,
2007.
Were you at Celebration 4?
I was
at the booth.
Oh, I was there too. Yeah, I was there at Celebration 4, but I was there. Well, maybe, although I was there for, I think, less than 24 hours. Myself and Ryan and I's mutual friend, Dan, we flew in like Friday night on a red eye, went to the show on Saturday, and then we tried to fly back Saturday night, couldn't get on the flight, and then flew back Sunday morning. So it was like a super quick trip in. I don't remember all that much about Celebration 4, unfortunately. It was such a whirlwind kind of.
In a daze from the red eye, though.
Yeah. I remember meeting Robert Watts at a book signing, and that's like, and just being there. But yeah. So, but I was fascinated, you know, looking at your piece about setting that up here in the book. And I hope I went. It sounds awesome. I hope I was there.
It was 2007. We didn't really have a whole lot going on at that point. We'd announced The Force Unleashed.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe like the PSP Battlefront Renegade Squadron might have been later that year. I know I think we promoted that at Comic-Con quite a bit a few months later. But yeah, we were like, so what are we going to actually have? We have to be at Star Wars Celebration. So I was like, you know, I'm the lowly PR guy. Like, I got an idea. It's the 25th anniversary of Star Wars games this year. And then we did, I didn't focus as much in the book on this one. But just for people listening, the last chapter is Memoirs of a LucasArts Alumnus, which was basically a blog entry I did when I left that I expanded on a little bit. But it's just some fun memories I have of being there, one of which was putting these exhibits together. In a Comic-Con, I did a 25 years of LucasArts, which also happened to be the same. It was founded in 1982, and in 2007, the exhibit was similar, but a little bit different, because at Celebration, it was all Star Wars games, not all of which were LucasArts. It was other companies, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2007, or the San Diego, you know, we didn't have Atari 2600 Star Wars in there because it wasn't a LucasArts game. We had Sam and Max and Monkey Island. And, you know, I guess Star Wars NES was the first LucasArts games again.
Yes. It's like poetry. It rhymes. Yeah, actually, the same word. So something I have become kind of fascinated with in the past few years. I've been a teacher for many years, and I kind of started digging into, like, during the pandemic, just the weird hobbies that we develop. Built in like an old Windows XP PC, and I started digging into the Lucas Learning games.
Oh, nice.
Do you have any familiarity with those at all?
Just a moment. I will provide you a visual aid.
Uh-oh. Yes. We got DroidWorks, we got Pit Droids. Hoping to see some Gungan Frontiers here soon.
Hold on. Well,
Jar Jar's Journey.
Oh, here's the big stack.
There they are.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. a more complete collection than I have.
Ah, yes. This right here, the secret.
Ooh.
One of the rarest Star Wars games you can find. I paid like $80 for it. It is the most I paid for anything in my collection.
Wow.
Star Wars Math Jabba's Game Galaxy. You can get it as a jewel case edition for like $5 on eBay.
Yep.
But the big box version, which I of course had to have for my collection, apparently was only available through LucasArts.com back then. So if you ordered it online, you got the big box version. But if you went to Best Buy or whatever, it was always just the jewel case by itself. So hopefully I just drove up the value of my
Game Galaxy. I am going to make sure I go on eBay before this episode airs.
No, I waited online for, it took me 3-4 years, I think, to get that.
Wow.
Or to pop up on eBay. I was in a bidding war with somebody, and then a month or two later, I just happened to run into him on Reddit, I think. And it's like,
wow.
And he was like, oh, you're the guy who outbid me for Jabba's Game Galaxy. You know, because he has an even bigger Star Wars. He gets like every SKU, like across the board. I'm good if I have, you know, if they're identical versions, like if it was PS2 and Xbox, I can just have one or the other. I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
But he's got to have them all. And he eventually did get a copy for like $30, I think. Because he didn't have any competition, because like, we were like the only two people in the world with this eBay.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had pretty good luck with the first few of those, like Activity Center, Gungan Frontier, I think. I was getting like...
You have the second release of Gungan Frontier.
Which, mine is a green box. One.
Well, this is green. It's also the yellow.
Oh, it's the more uniform branding. Yeah, no, I have like the that too.
Android Works.
The other one.
They have later releases for those who aren't seeing this. You know, the first few games like had their own different look, but they had like a uniform kind of yellow box as the Lucas Learning games started coming out. Jar Jar's adventure book, I think, is one of the highlights, actually.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Activity Center. The there's like a Mad Libs section that's voiced by
honestly,
Ahmed Best.
I haven't played more than Jar Jar's. I think that's the only one I played.
Yeah,
back when I worked for that website, they actually sent it to me to review, so I reviewed that game.
Nice. Yeah, I do want to, you know, like it was like a pandemic project that I eventually got like sidetracked on and then like, you know, just sort of fell off. But one day I would like to really kind of go deeper into it because I feel like it was a really cool initiative. George always had, you know, an interest in education and, broadening the minds of children, and you know, it's something I really love. And
do you remember the LucasArts learning game that really wasn't educational at all?
Super Bombad Racing.
Yes.
Yep, the last one on PS2.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a sad way for the line to go out, but fascinating history though. All right.
There's all these little rabbit holes you can go into when you look at this stuff. It's fun. Even the bad stuff is fun. I just love that kind of stuff.
We don't want to take up too much more of your time. It is getting late, but I think for me personally, when I was reading the book, the biggest kind of like revelation was I had no idea how popular Galaxy of Heroes was.
Oh my god, it is humongous. Yeah.
Like, it's like a $1 billion game. Like,
it's the most played Star Wars game ever, I have no doubt. Like, probably several times over. You think everyone has played Knights of the Old Republic? No. Everyone has played Galaxy of Heroes.
Yeah, and it's just wild as like a console and PC gamer, like, and I'm someone who doesn't really play mobile games, like, you know, stuff like that just kind of exists in my periphery, and like, but really, like, there's like a massive audience. I don't know anyone who plays it, but like, obviously people do. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that if you do play it, you really don't talk about it much, I guess. I mean, I played it a little bit when it came out. I played it a little again for some screenshots from this book. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting premise, actually, because it finds a way for, you know, you to use characters throughout the canon and even Legends in some cases. I think now they throw in some Legends characters, and it still fits within the canon because it's not them really fighting. It's like it's almost a Holo Chess kind of thing in the canon. It's like people gather at a cantina and you have your legendary characters fight each other. It's clever, but it's also, if you want to be good at it, I think it's pretty expensive.
Most mobile games are, yeah.
Is this a game that my coworker plays, where he did play, and he said he was like in a clan, and he would dedicate, like, yeah, I don't know, he was in a clan with people from all over the country, and they would like put a lot of hours each week into playing
this
game.
The only Star Wars mobile game that's mattered. Several have just come and gone, even within, like, what was it? Uprising was hugely hyped. It's one of, it may be the most hyped mobile game I've ever seen, because it was, it came out in 2015. I think it was part of the Force Friday.
Yeah.
You know, Bonanza before Force Awakens. And it was the first game in the new canon.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it took place, I think, after Return of the Yeah, I think it took place like shortly. I never really played it, but it was basically Diablo. Diablo with Star Wars. It's not fantasy or anything, but you would think like that combination will work very well, but it didn't even last it might have lasted just a year. It was a year, if that. And then it's gone forever. Yeah. Can't play it. You know, I played for a little bit. I played a game called Commander. I think it's just called Star Wars Commander. It was like a, you know, every brand has, you know, Simpsons Tapped Out. There was an Avengers Academy, I think it was called, and we're all kids. But it was like, you know, Sim City-ish almost kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that only lasted like a year. And then there was like a game called Force Arena that I think lasted like 3 months. And yeah, it's like crazy how just Galaxy of Heroes is just like kept chugging. It's still super popular. Or down came out. Yeah, it's been out 8 years.
Huh.
So wild. Yeah. Another question I had for you was, when you were, you know, I guess you've been, this has kind of been a journey you've been on for a while, playing all these Star Wars games, but once you were starting to, like, you know, kind of go beyond just, like, the stuff that you would pick up at release or rent as a kid, and you were, like, really researching this, were there any games that you came across that you, like, you know, besides just, like, oh, I'm gonna play this for, you know, 10 minutes, get some screenshots, get an idea and like move on. Were there any games that you like discovered and were like, whoa, this rules, and then like, you know, spent a lot of time on?
Oh, wow. I feel like there is, but I can't think of it. Maybe if I look at my collection. I don't know for sure, but I will tell you one of the cooler ones I discovered in this journey, I guess you could call it, is a game called Star Wars Attack on the Death Star. Do you know this one?
I don't know. No.
Again,
this is a game that only came out in Japan, along with the one we've talked about. I think those are the only games that have only come out.
Okay.
It came out on a system made by Sharp. It was like a PC, and it's got a bunch of XP 3000 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know this game. We have we have footage of this game on our YouTube channel as actually. Cool. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's called Attack on the Death Star. It's basically a remake of the 1983 arcade game with like really advanced like speech for 1990, I think, when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
it would have blown you away. There's like a 6-minute cutscene all in vector graphics or vector style graphics to start the game. And, you know, there's chatter as you're playing, which in 1990 is pretty unheard of. I actually got the chance to play it at a Long Island retro show in 2019, I think. And it was fun at first and really cool until the terrible radar was not showing me where the TIE fighter I had to shoot to continue to the Death Star was. And I was literally just looking at space for 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. So that's one of the more interesting releases most people haven't heard of. One just fun tidbit about it too is called Attack on the Death Star. It is very obviously A New Hope. It's adapting, but the cover is the second Death Star with the Millennium Falcon coming right at you. It's a very, you know, famous piece of key art. In your head. Not that Death Star.
Yeah, that game is super cool. I just played it on an emulator.
Nice.
So, yeah, but I know at the, is it the Long Island? So what you said, Long Island Retro. I think I've heard Jeremy Parrish talk about people, you know, showing up there with like the whole Sharp X68000 setup, like the monitor and the speakers, and the sound is great. And I'm looking
Vasilini is amazing on that.
Yeah. It looks like Yuzo Koshiro did the music for this X68000 game too. Yeah, Attack on the Death Star. So so I'll have to go back and check that out. I have a Mister. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Chris, or not, but yeah,
I have not actually dabbled with one, but I'm certainly familiar with what they are.
Yeah, so and the Sharp X68000 is on there, so I could get a more authentic experience playing that game, you know, give it another shot. Yeah. So
one of these days I'll get around to one of those, but I'm good. I have the most of the analog stuff. I have the Genesis and Super Nintendo ones are called. I have those
Mega SG, Mega ST.
Oh, nice.
Super NT.
Super NT. Yep.
Yeah, I want to get a Pocket sooner than later, but we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to jump on that because they just discontinue stuff on a whim.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. And then they are ridiculous on eBay. John, did you have any more questions? I have one more.
I have one more too, but it's kind of dumb. So if yours is yours good?
I'll answer whatever you want. What do you got?
Okay. Do your dumb one first, John.
I want to know, like, what's it like to get soda at the same, like, fountain machine as George Lucas? What's that like?
That's a good one.
Yes, there is a point in the book where I talk about George Lucas encounters. There was a moment when I worked at LucasArts where he and I were both at the soda fountain at the same time. And you're mainly just like, keep your cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yep.
Don't say anything stupid. Don't say anything at all. And, you know, then you're regretting that you didn't look to see what he got. Like, you know, I got a Coke. He must not have gotten Coke. It might have been, I don't know, Sprite or something, a few nozzles down. But.
Well, you know, I was reading about that moment in the book and I was thinking, like, I was wondering to myself, like, I wonder, do they tell you guys, like, okay, leave George alone. Don't talk to George. Like, is there some kind of, like, you know?
No, they don't tell you anything. Everyone just kind of knows.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the guy who's, like, bugging the, gotcha.
It was so weird. You know, I think I mentioned this, like, I didn't see him that many times, but when I saw him, it was, like, at ideal moments. Like, when IGN came to visit LucasArts, George Lucas showed up. My uncle just randomly showed up. My uncle from Texas came to California on a trip and was like, hey, I'm at the campus right now. You want to say hi? Okay, yeah. Oh, look, there's George Lucas.
Wow. There's my coworker, George Lucas. this guy.
Yeah, it was funny how that worked.
Yeah. Okay, well, I have a comment and then a question. Yeah. So one other thing I loved about your book, you mentioned your friend, also our friend, Alex Kane, who wrote the boss fight of books, Knights of the Old Republic.
That was such a last minute addition.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was reacting to the scorpion that appears in Survivor.
Oh, yeah.
Which actually does look a lot like Scorpion Vader. So I was like, is there a chance that's a reference? I don't know. And then I put that on Twitter and he responded like, OMG, those antenna or something. And
yeah.
Wow, that's actually a good point. Like the.
Mm-hmm.
So I put his quote in there just because, you know, I don't think I ever told him. I don't even know if he knows. Oh. But Alex, if you're listening, you're in my book.
Yeah, well, you know, we had him on the show to talk about his book, so...
cool.
Yeah.
Great guy. Okay, so my kind of last question here is, what are your thoughts on the future of Star Wars games?
I think it's really positive. I really like what I'm seeing. Jedi Survivor ended with some really interesting stuff for Cal. I'm not sure if I'm totally on board with how they executed that gameplay wise. I don't want to give spoilers, but I think if you've
been
there,
you haven't finished it yet.
But it's going to make for some really interesting stuff. And, you know, I kind of hope, and I think they might do this. I kind of hope they might go in a Jedi Knight kind of direction where, maybe like the way you play determines the actual fate of Cal Kestis. Does he fall to the dark side? I think that could happen. I think that might be an option for what they do. So, you know, that's going to be obviously probably the same style of gameplay. I'm sure they're going to do some new things. And then I'm blanking on the Ubisoft name. Outlaws? Yeah, Outlaws.
Yeah.
That looks awesome. One thing I point out in the book actually is another last minute edit. You know, I talk about the Battlefront 3 canceled Battlefront 3 game. And its whole big thing was that you would be able to go from the land into space,
you know, yeah.
with no transition. I mean, yeah, but just seamlessly, right? That's the word I'm looking for. And I saw that happen in Outlaws, and it wasn't even like a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's never, I don't think it's been in a game yet at all. You know, that was supposed to happen 15 years ago. And we still haven't really seen it. And that big innovation was just like a moment in their gameplay demo. And you know, just the kind of open worldness of it all, that the fact that a whole other company's getting a stab, you know, Ubisoft 2000's record wasn't the greatest for Star Wars, but they're a whole other company now.
Yeah.
I think they really want to, you know, knock it out of the park there. I feel like I'm forgetting something. Is there another game out there?
There's a few things. Probably, I mean, there was supposed to be the KOTOR remake, right? Or was it a sequel?
Sorry, what?
Yeah. Was it a KOTOR remake?
Yeah, that's, I don't know where that's
maybe at. Not going to happen.
I think it's
still
going to happen. I do, but, you know, Embracer's had so much problems lately. You know, maybe, I don't know. That's the biggest question mark. You know, there's also the Respawn first person shooter, of course. That's one that was, that is supposed to, all we really know about it is that it's like in the spirit of Dark Forces. Part of me is hoping, okay, this is where they actually bring Kyle Katarn in for real. I wouldn't say that's impossible. It's probably doubtful, but you know, I give it a 35% chance a Kyle game.
The Night Dive remaster of Dark Forces.
And yeah, that was coming. Yeah, I was gonna get to that too. The remaster of Dark Forces, which, you know, part of me is like, I mean, I'm very excited about this. They do great work.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me is also like, man, if they really wanted to, they could all maybe have two versions of the game, and one is like just a straight up remake or a remaster, and then another is like they just completely change the words, you know, change the dialogue, change the on-screen text, and you have a new story that fits in canon and introduces Kyle Katarn. You obviously can't have him kept getting the Death Star plans, but maybe he's getting something else that pertained to that.
I thought you were going to say maybe like Jyn Erso or, you know, Cassian or something.
I think that would make sense for a like a skin for sure.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if they did that. Not that you need a skin in a first person shooter anyway, but that'd be interesting too if they found a way to make you can't really, but we don't really know the story behind the Dark Troopers that were in Mandalorian, right? Like you could involve like Moff Gideon, like a younger Moff Gideon getting that program started. Man, I really want this now that I think about it.
You're willing it into existence on this episode.
Can I will into existence the one thing though that I really, when I say what this is, it might actually shock you.
Okay.
There has never been, outside of adaptations, like, you know, adaptations of movies, and outside of adaptations and like the occasional spin-off level in Battlefront 2 or something, there has never been an original story starring the original trilogy characters.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
Can you believe that? I mean, I realized that a couple years ago and just like how has that happened? There's no Luke Skywalker game. There's no, I guess Flight of the Falcon technically is a Han Solo game. It doesn't count. I know that there actually was a pretty serious pitch for a Han Solo game at LucasArts back in the day. Mm. That's probably the closest we've ever come. I think you could even take, you know, the Jedi game, the Cal Kestis game, and do like DLC. Like, I don't know. Did you play Shadow of Mordor? Like, I actually didn't play the DLC. From what I understand, you are a completely different character in the DLC, and it's its own thing. Or almost like a Spider-Man Miles Morales or a, what was that, Uncharted spinoff game? Like, something like that. Do like a smaller thing.
Yeah.
And I think a really prime story you could do is Leia in the 1 year that she trains under Luke. Right after, you know, Return of the Jedi. Because that gives you the chance to develop, you know, your character in an RPG fashion or whatever. And, you know, she beats him. We see her beat him in a lightsaber duel, right? In Rise of Skywalker. Like that story would be an awesome game.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe Luke a little bit, but it's mainly a Leia game, right? And just like Luke, just, you got to think he does cool things. You know, you read the comics and there's all these canonical stories. Like, why can't they do that in games? That is like, if I were running things at Lucasfilm Games, like... I just, it blows my mind there hasn't been a Luke Skywalker game or a Han Solo game.
Or even really a Rey Skywalker game, you know, like the star of the most recent, you know, saga movies.
Yeah,
they never really,
all adaptations.
Yeah.
And, you know, ridiculous Battlefront confrontations.
Right.
Well, she did fight Darth Maul that one time. Yeah, I mean, there's so much potential. My personal dream is still a Dr. Aphra game. I don't know what that would be. Like maybe like Metal Gear Solid. I don't know. But maybe like, I think like Mass Effect. It would be like Mass Effect. Lots of dialogue choices.
I mean,
morality.
She's Lara Croft, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, she could be. Yes.
Yeah, I mean. I hate just like slapping characters onto something that already exists, but yeah, I mean, you know, like Indiana, it's funny, like Indiana Jones for a while there was doing Lara Croft games like Infernal Machine. I think Emperor's Tomb, not quite as much, but you know, it was like, you know, Indiana Jones very clearly inspired Lara Croft, but when it came to games, eventually Indiana Jones was inspired by Lara Croft.
Yeah. Yeah. My pitch that I keep making on this show is a like an 8-bit or 16-bit style Star Wars game that would cost them about $50 to make, you know, in comparison to these other games that they're producing. And it's like, it would be so exciting, I think.
So, I mean, okay, here.
Yeah.
Way back at LucasArts, sitting in marketing meetings where we were like, okay, what is our pre-order bonus going to be for The Force Unleashed? I was like, what if we did Super The Force Unleashed?
Oh my God. Oh yeah.
Like, I won't say it was really seriously considered, but I think it was like a 2-minute conversation of like how that's really kind of out of scope, but it's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I'm glad you said that. Cause I've got tweets dating back to like probably 2015 of being like, you know, they need to resurrect Super Star Wars, The Force Unleashed.
Yeah.
And the thing that made those games so fun was just how ridiculous they were. Like, you know, they follow the plot, but, you know, the first level, you fight a Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what?
Yeah.
The kid, like, rises from the... Yeah, they're just ridiculous. You need to embrace the ridiculousness of it. You know, the gameplay could be comparable even better, obviously.
Yeah.
Those would be cheap to make and would make a lot of money.
Yeah,
really would.
Exactly. I mean, and there's been big successes lately, like the new Ninja Turtles game, I think, was a huge hit.
Yeah.
Streets of Rage 4 was a big hit.
Yeah.
They just announced a Rugrats game that's going to be done Rugrats game that's going to be done
there's
in an 8-bit style.
Toxic Crusaders.
There you go. Yeah. And I don't know, like when I think it was Force Awakens when Disney Infinity was big, or maybe it was like Rogue One, but it was in that time frame. And I remember just like having a lot of fun and being really excited to play the Star Wars content in that game, just because it was like, you know, there's something coming out around the time of the new movie. I'm like all excited and hyped up for the new movie, you know. But that wasn't really a game that I necessarily wanted to play all that much. But it was like, well, I'll play whatever the new thing is. So it's just, I guess what I'm trying to say is it seems like a relatively low cost way to market stuff that like is gone now, and it bums me out. Like, you know, there was a Platoon game for the Nintendo Entertainment System, you know, I mean, they used to put out a game for everything.
Yeah, I know.
And obviously the quality was not usually all that great for licensed games, but yeah, they could make a great Star Wars game and it wouldn't cost a lot of money, and it's like, that's just, to me, just feels like such an untapped opportunity. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that all the time.
It's entirely possible. In my own time, I have completely mapped out what the Force Awakens super game would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is entirely possible.
Oh, man.
There are 19 levels.
Yeah.
And you start out, your first boss is the thing that pokes its eye up out of the sand.
Kojima. Like the thing that says Kojima. Yeah.
But really, really, I think the Mandalorian or Ahsoka, I think, is if you wanted to do it now,
would be the absolutely.
I remember watching episode 2 of the Mandalorian, and he's like outside of the sandcrawler.
Sure. Yeah,
and I was like, when is someone just going to do a mod of the Boba Fett skin and put that over Luke? And I don't think anyone's done it, but it is that.
Oh yeah,
like that level of Super Star Wars.
Absolutely.
Hmm. Oh, can I say one thing about, I listened to your last episode, and you guys talked about the 32X Star Wars game.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you also kind of just glossed over the fact that you had access to the actual arcade version of that game.
Yeah.
You guys need to appreciate that, because that game is so rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw it once in my life. I saw it at a Minneapolis Airport, I think, when it was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this must be what the 32X game, they're coming out. I don't think it was out yet. And this must be what it's based on. I thought it was an original game, but it's based on this. I'm sure I'll see it around again someday.
Yeah.
Never have. Never seen it.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I'm close to Chicago and the Galloping Ghost Arcade, so I'm pretty lucky in that way. And there's a lot of great Star Wars games there.
You don't release stuff,
a Willow game.
The Willow game, yeah, it was out of order the last time I was there. The Willow arcade game, but yeah,
oh, cool, cool. Yeah, I've never seen that in arcades either. And that is, I have played that through Maine, but
yeah.
You know, there's also a does Galloping Ghost have the Starfighter arcade version? This exists. I've never seen it.
The PS2 Starfighter.
Yes.
No, they don't have that.
The PS2 game as a. I think there's like a motion element to it too.
Oh, wow.
I've never actually seen that.
Yeah, I just stumbled across this, and there is footage of this particular. I think it's called Tsunami. Is like the actual like system that it's in, and there were different games, but they took the PS2 game Star Wars Starfighter, and they adapted it to this, and it's like a truncated version of that game. Fits this arcade system, and I just wonder if it exists anymore and if anyone can play it and or has played it. I think I was on Moby Games or something, and then I came across this, and it's a true rarity and obscurity, maybe even more so than those mobile Battlefront games.
Yeah,
wow, definitely gonna keep an eye out. I love that. I love that game on PS2.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we're going to wrap up the episode here. So, Chris, thank you so much for sharing your time with us here tonight.
Yeah, this was awesome. I really, ever since you dragged out that stack of PlayStation magazines, I knew I was in the right place.
I knew I'd win you over with that. If you were going to dip in the first 15 minutes... secured this full session.
Yeah, don't fumble the max. Okay, so Chris, can you do you want to tell us one more time sort of the what the book's all about and where people can find it and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's called X-Wings, Lightsabers, and Scorpion Vader Celebrating 40 Years of Star Wars Video Games. It is available right now only on Amazon through Kindle. The quickest way to get there is simply scorpionvader.com, and then you'll see whatever territory you're in. Just click on the flag. It's like inside of my own website. If you want to just check out stuff I've done for whatever reason, there are some old PlayStation magazine articles there. There's some stuff I did at LucasArts, you know, and otherwise on I don't know where I am at social media these days, but. I think I'm still technically mostly Twitter, which I refuse to call X. That's CBake76. And I'm CBake76 on Threads, which I rarely use. Blue Sky I use a little bit more. I think that's how we... Was it Blue Sky that we contacted each other? Yeah. That I'm just CBake. It's a mess. Social media is a mess these days. It used to be so fun.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Actually, I didn't think to figure out what my Blue Sky handle is before. We always used to like sign off with our Twitter handles, but I barely use Twitter anymore. So, but anyway,
superhero.vg is my YouTube, which does have some Star Wars content. It has my Mark Hamill interview also.
Ooh. Oh wow, okay.
I referenced that earlier. It's all audio, and I put some video to it. I've got the Ewoks and Droids games on there, and I've got the part of the Battle of Hoth section in the book with moving pictures and stuff.
Nice. Okay.
Well, we will put a bunch of links into the show notes.
Awesome. We will do that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And Ryan and I both read the book, both recommend it, and absolutely.
If anyone who buys the book, if you could please leave a review that helps algorithms and such, preferably 5 stars, be nice, you know. That
I feel like if you're going to read this book, you're going. It's a 5-star book if you,
thank you
want
so much
to read about Star Wars video games.
Yes.
And actually, when does this podcast go up?
It depends on how long it takes me to edit it, but I would say within the next 48 hours. We'll say.
Okay, I will let your audience know that September 27th, which is my birthday through September 30th, the book's going to be free on Amazon. So if you go to Amazon, if you go to scorpionvader.com between the 27th and the 30th, my birthday present is allowing you to have the book for free. If you do that, please leave a review.
Yeah.
That's all I ask.
For sure.
Yeah, but also just buy it. It is just worth $5.
Sure, sure. Obviously my wallet would appreciate that if you wanted to plunk down the $4.99.
Right on, right on. Cool. All right, well, thank you so much again, Chris. We will be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast, probably focused on Star Wars video games, based on how things are going.
So
until then, you can find all of our previous episodes, videos, blog posts, etc. at blockaderunnerpodcast.com. if you want to reach out to the show, you can email us blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. Ryan and I are both on Blue Sky. Ryan, you know your Blue Sky handle.
I know my Blue Sky. I run the account Standard Definition Gaming, and that is at defstan480.bsky.social. And John, yours is the Blockade Runner podcast account, which I believe is blockaderun.bsky.social.
That sounds right. Okay, thank you very much, Ryan. So
you're welcome.
Chris, thanks again for being here.
It was an absolute pleasure, guys. This was so much fun.
Glad to hear it. So, yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.